Is she, will she come back soon? Should I start waiting for her, or?
It's not, go ahead.
Oh, okay.
I mean, she will be back soon. I think she's just...
Oh, here she is, maybe. Well, it's really nice to be here. This is the first time I've been here, so thank you for inviting me. And when Roland asked me to come, I thought of different things, but one thing that I've been thinking about a lot recently is are the Shambhala art teachings. I'm actually teaching a Shambhala art one-day program in a couple weeks in Boulder, so I'm kind of turning my attention towards that. But so this is sort of based on that, and I always like to say it's art with not with a big A. So it's not, it's the all of Shambhala art or Dharma art. This book is the older version. I think now it's called something else. This book, Perception, Pure Perception, or something like that. These are teachings that Chögyam Trungpa did sort of throughout when he was teaching, but it's they're not rooted in any one art discipline, but it's more about how we might perceive our world, perceive and express in our world from a contemplative state of mind. So part of it is about your state of mind and what, you know, what we just did in terms of practice. So that mind that could be settled and you know, sort of not grasping onto anything. And what happens when that it comes about is that we actually are able to perceive our world with more vibrancy and clarity. And, you know, it could be just as simple as going outside and appreciating that it's not so hot, because now it's, you know, now the evening has come and the sun has gone down. So it's just appreciating that through our sense perceptions, you know, our physical feeling that we might have, the appreciation maybe of different colors, you know, things aren't so like bright. We can see in a different way. I'm not being judgmental particularly, but so Shambhala art is about direct, sort of our direct perception of what we might encounter from our meditative state of mind. And there's a sort of very spontaneous and somewhat unselfconscious aspect to that. So in terms of everyday life, we, you know, we come here, places like this or at home, and you practice meditation rather intentionally. You say, okay, I'm going to practice for 10 minutes or half an hour or whatever it is. Whatever you've decided, and you sit and you have your place to sit. So that's our formal practice, that we're working with our state of mind. We're working with our habitual patterns. We're working with, you know, how we spin out. You know, I came here, I had a very spinning day, so I was like spinning for a while. So you work with that. And in our formal meditation practice. So I think in when we talk about art in everyday life, so there's the artfulness that we derive initially from our practice. It's very direct and appreciative. And then there's the everyday life aspect, where we're just driving or being with our family or, I don't know, whatever you guys do, that our meditative mind kind of seeps into. Our meditative mind kind of just all of a sudden we're reminded that we could not be so distracted. Maybe just for a second. Because that might not last very long. But that's our post-meditation practice. So art in everyday life sort of spans both our contemplative, formal meditation mind that we might discover in our practice, and of course we spend a lot of time in practice without that mind. So we work with, in that our practice, we work with that contemplative, meditative state of mind. And then the everyday life is that we could bring that calmness, you know, in shamatha vipassana. So we say shamatha is about developing peace and calmness. So we could bring that, as well as the vipassana is perceiving with awareness, with clarity. So we could bring both of those things together into our everyday life. It's rather spontaneous sometimes, art in everyday life. It's based on appreciation, actually, that we could appreciate our world through our sense perceptions, and we could appreciate our world without judgment. You know, usually we appreciate it, but like, oh, that's a great thing, you know, or that's a terrible thing, or whatever. So we could appreciate our world, and also we can appreciate the heart that sees that, which is our heart of basic goodness. So we, you know, so appreciation, it actually joins us with our world. You know, we can see the whatever the coolness of the evening air, and that has a kind of fundamentally healthy or good quality, and then in turn it brings out our basic goodness. It, you know, just at that small moment. So that's like the sort of the fundamental crux of art in everyday life. And I don't know if anyone here is an art person, considered an artist. You self-identify as an artist. Mm.
I do some art.
Yeah, right.
I do poetry also. And
uh-huh.
stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Visual arts or spoken art. So often, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I have a fine arts bachelor's degree, so often the basic thing that is encountered in art is, you know, there's the artist and then there's the audience. And the artist is somehow discovered some fantastic thing that they're going to communicate to the audience. And there's pressure on people who, I don't know if you experienced that, but, you know, there was a pressure to kind of be kind of...
to express it in a way that other people got what I was or saying.
Right, and that opened their eyes in a certain way that...
And they experienced it the way I wanted them to, and on their side, that I was able to make them experience it the way I wanted, you know, so
right.
It's like a dual sort of...
Right, so that's, like, in all art, I was in the Mudra Theater Group for a while, and, mm-hmm. and in all art, there's this sense of, you know, the artist or the person, and then there's the audience, and then there's this dialogue that goes back and forth, and sometimes they like it, sometimes they don't like it, or the artist is... Anyway, you know, it's the basic principle of entertainment, really. So when we talk about this art that springs from a meditative state of mind, this is slightly different from that. It has many of the components of traditional art disciplines in that they... Traditional art, any art discipline, whether it's spoken word or poetry or visual arts or, you know, installations.
Fiber arts,
yeah. Oh, yeah. I had a knitting group for a while, a knitting and meditation group. So, you know, there's all the materials and methods, and that's actually similar, but it's more like how do we connect that with a contemplative state of mind? I'm not here to say that's how there's a technique that does that. But since I understand all of you have meditated a lot, or some, that I think you must have a sense of what this state of mind is, even like a, you know, some feeling of that. So in this kind of Dharma art or Shambhala art or whatever it's called these days, it's actually allowing that meditative insight or, you know, resting place that we have to engage with the process of the materials and methods of art, and in that way actually have some quality of dissolution of this of the ego quality of the art that's fixated in a way. It's a little bit fixated, like there's the artist and then there's the whatever, consumers, audience, critics.
Or self-critic.
Yeah, you know, self-critic.
That's what comes up for me. You know,
yeah.
It's just the self-criticism about that it has to be this perfect.
Right.
Something. You know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
There's no audience for me. I'm not selling, you know, what I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, we're often our own audience.
Yeah.
Because...
incredible critic.
Right. I mean, any editorial process, whether it's writing... or, you know, if you're painting, you're in there, like, doing stuff, and then you step back and you say, well, it needs a little more blue over here. So that is an editorial process. You know, that that is a dialogue that we have within ourselves, actually. Of so it's not that we get rid of that, but it's more what we're talking about is... sort of allowing that to arise without struggle. And I think that we could have this dialogue and it's not so fixated either audience and me, but there's a flow between those things. And it's really, from the meditation point of view, I feel it's like the dissolution of, you know, like when we talk about basic meditation, we talk about egohood, and we fixate our identity, and there's self and other. So it's really, we're working with that same split, really. It's just in terms of how we express through the sense perceptions, whether it's, you know, and I'm including our verbal expression, our tactile expression, our proprioceptive, or colors, or, you know, all of our sense perceptions are engaged in our expression. So so part of art in everyday life is that we could sort of have that quality, and maybe it's not like we're going to have it 24/7. It's more that we might have a glimpse of that kind of appreciation that is without kind of judgment, self and other. Maybe just for a split second, you know, we could appreciate our tea. You know, Rinpoche always used to talk about making a cup of tea or coffee or whatever it is for everyone.
I garden a lot, and the other day I was weeding, because that is how I come back to not having the crazy mind after work. I go and I weed and I hit a point that I think is what you're touching on, is it's been hot and I'm weeding in my tomatoes and my cat is laying under the tomato plants, you know? And I'm like, wow, the cat's just chilling in the tomato plants. And I'm going and I'm weeding. I have a lot of weeding. And and then I was kind of acutely aware of how much cooler the temperature was underneath the tomatoes. And how wonderful and soft and cool it was. And the cat's a genius, but, you know, but I had that moment of awareness where
right.
I was connected with my environment and I wasn't thinking about anything else other than, oh, this is nice. If I was small enough, I could go underneath it, you know? And I think when you're talking about that, that's the first thing that came to my mind was that moment. Every day I'm doing my everyday weeding, and then I have that glimpse of connectedness with my environment.
Yeah, and it's often through the sense perceptions. I mean, sometimes it's through our it's called our mind, you know, our thinking mind. But often it's like either visually or tactily, you know, we just have a glimpse of that. So I brought, there's more I wanted to say, but I thought, well, maybe since this is coming up, I brought a little exercise to do with our sense perceptions.
I see.
Right.
Did you knit your sweater? I smell.
Yeah, right, I did knit my sweater. So if everybody could just take, here's some napkins, and we'll do a little guided meditation with this, our senses.
Just to make an orange and a napkin.
Yes, yes. And I hope there's the right number of things. I like oranges because they bring up a lot of emotions, actually. When you're peeling them. So, yeah. Oh,
just give me a nap.
There's like there's more paper towels over.
Yeah.
Oh.
Might need more. What exercises?
So maybe we could just start by feeling the tactile sense of the orange. You know, and I'm just gonna. We'll have reports of what you felt, but you don't have to verbal. Just take some time to feel the orange, the tactily, and you might even want to engage other senses like our vision or our smell. So, and just sort of notice what you notice. Notice how you're, kind of talking to yourself about this orange. And then, when it feels right to you, usually we do other things with the orange, such as peel them. So when it feels right to you, like, take your time, though, and just notice, in terms of your hands and even your emotions as you sort of investigate what it's like to peel the orange and just allow any of your senses to notice what they notice. Might have different ways of thinking about this, proceeding. Just allow your, whatever it is, your sight, your smell, your ears, the right time, you might actually investigate how we usually do the next thing, which is breaking the orange into parts. So just notice what you notice. at some point you may be interested in becoming closer to the orange and experiencing it in your mouth. So whatever timing works for you, and just notice that sensation of it being in your mouth. Oh, I don't know if we want to eat the whole thing, or...
Well, you have to, don't you?
So, maybe this is a time we could do a little debrief of what came up for you during that exercise that we do, you know, sort of in an ordinary way. What did you notice?
The skin of the orange felt weird.
Yeah.
I mean, not slick. I don't know. I can't quite come up with a texture, but to me, I was expecting it to be like a lemon or a lime or a grapefruit, shiny.
Oh, it has like a, it has like a,
like
sticky,
a powdery,
or
almost like a powdery, yeah. Dry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Uh-huh.
Also.
Yeah.
What I like the, before I peeled it, I like the feeling of like
ripeness. You can kind of squeeze it, you can feel how much is in there, and like, that's all nutrition and vitamins. And so it's almost like you can feel it wanting to come out, you know? And it's a fruit, so it does want to come out.
Yeah, like that's great.
Feel that.
Yeah.
Kind of squeeze it a little bit, and you can feel it.
Yeah. It sort of had this oozing quality. I don't know if that's what was oozing out, even on the skin. It had a slight...
Yeah.
Like sticky.
That was a real distinct thing when we started to peel it too, is the moisture coming out of it then.
Mm-hmm. I thought that supported.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and just being aware of how right around where you were peeling it was moist, and there was, you know, almost like a little bit of a powdery dryness to it, and then when you peeled it, it was sticky and wet. And
yeah. Yeah. Because often when you peel it, it does sort of spray, like if you, I don't know, there's juice in the peel or something like that. Yeah, and it sprays a little when you break it and peel it.
The smell was nice, even before we peeled it.
I was surprised at how many, surprised, but I had so many thoughts, you know, so I wasn't really kind of getting into the oozy. Wetness. Uh-huh. It was more like the first thing I did was I thought, oh shit. you know, this isn't really in season.
Yeah.
And
that's
I wonder
true.
If, you know, if it's going to be any good. Mm-hmm. And I thought, geez, you know, what am I going to do if it doesn't taste
right? When I smelled it, I thought, this isn't quite ready yet. That was.
Yeah. So I was like, but, you know, what am I going to do? You know? And then I was aware of this thing of taking off the white part and knowing that it's really good for me, but I don't really want to eat it. So there was a sort of conflict going on about,
it's kind
you
of
know, don't take it out.
That's the
I don't want to eat it. You know?
Yes.
So it just, and I wonder, do I think this stuff when I normally eat an orange? I don't think so. I mean, I think I just kind of peel it,
I think about
stick
that every
it in.
Time I eat an orange.
But do I have that?
I think my body should just eat it. Just
Yeah.
Like apples, I'm good. I'll eat the whole apple core. Like I just eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
Oranges is tough.
Oranges are complicated, actually, because they bring up a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of components. Like you have to
right,
peel
you
it.
Can't,
you can't get the white stuff.
Well, the first thing I thought was, did she wash them? You know, what's on my hands now? You know.
Uh-huh.
So it's like all this sort of judgments and so. And I see that, you know, other people are talking about sort of this experiential thing of the senses. But if I'm, you know, I'm not having a whole lot of that going on. You know?
Well, that's the sixth sense, actually.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the mind sense. And frankly, I did that. Usually we do this with raisins, which are much simpler.
Yeah, right.
But I always like oranges because they're kind of complicated. They bring up a lot, like, oh, God, they're kind of messy and...
I had some real feelings of nostalgia. My dad is a huge like fruit person. And it was growing up, the big deal was being able to peel the orange without breaking the peel. So I was like, am I going to...
Oh, you mean in one piece?
And then my next thought was, my mom says orange funny. She says orange. And then I was like, she hates fruit. So, I mean, I have all these thoughts.
Well, I had a really hard time sitting next to Carolyn peeling her orange. And I'm so awkward.
Oh, you did.
I felt so awkward.
Yeah.
I made a conscious decision.
I couldn't get these little things apart as neatly as she was getting.
Yeah, I sort of wanted to get Tantalos, but then. But,
And then I had a judgment about you. Why didn't you get Tantalos?
Because Trader Joe's didn't have any.
Well, I found myself wishing for peppermint stick because when I was a Girl Scout leader, we always used to go on a hike, and that big thing was you had your pocket knife and you could cut a little bit in your orange.
Oh, I see.
The peppermint stick down in there.
And then
because the orange was nice and warm, you could kind of squeeze it and
yeah.
Really?
Huh.
Sorry, I'm gonna have to do that.
Yeah, they do that with lemons at fair, like at a county fair. But I mean, so this is just a little experiment about art in everyday life, really, because all of the experiences, including maybe our, you know, like judgmental ones, are part of the fabric of our experience. And when we talk about the brilliance of our experience, or the great Eastern Sun, or whatever you want to call it, this is what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's all
that. It's all that. It's all of it, you know.
And some of it is, you know, just, I don't know, what would you call it, wisdom? You do sometimes, when you pick up a piece of fruit, you do want to assess.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
state
there's
it's
a public
in.
Health
you
aspect
know, you
of
have
it.
All these things that you.
Yeah.
Do.
So that is all within. Like within what, when we talk about the Great Eastern Sun, that's what it shines on, everything. So everything's
yeah.
there, you know, and it has, because it's great, that's the great part of it. I mean, you know, we could say that's great, but it's vast, you know, and it's brilliant, and that's the sun part of it. So even, you know, like the negative, what you would say, like, I was glad you... I brought oranges intentionally, actually, because I wanted to bring up different things.
Mm-hmm. Said they really make you think of the gray Eastern
Sun. Because they're orange and round. So, and then the east is... The east is like what the sun rises in the east. So our experience, the brilliance of our experience appears right before us. So, you know, we're... We sort of had a procedure. We went into the, you know, we kind of went, we had a little path of, mm-hmm. of working with the orange, you know, it's a little path.
Yeah, and we've done it before for a long time. So I wonder what it would be like to do it with a piece of fruit or some sort of food that we are not experienced at.
Uh-huh.
You know, like how do you, you know, are you supposed to peel it? And, you know, what would happen with
what
something
kind of,
that was not familiar?
Right,
you know?
Exploration,
no.
More curiosity, mm-hmm. potentially. I mean, do people feel curiosity? I mean, because,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we intentionally kind of slowed it down.
When I eat grapefruit in particular, I cannot stand the skin, nut. I only want the very pulpy inside. Mm. And my husband just cracks up because I just tear it apart and I get really into it. And it becomes like this whole, like, don't talk to me. I get my grapefruit. And, you know, I get so, and I get really wrapped up in what color it is. And, oh, this one, this little pulpy bit squishy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I really do, with grapefruit in particular.
Oh.
I don't know why, but I get really intensely into
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the curiosity is a lot of the, you know, art and, you know, just allowing ourselves to be curious, even about, you know, like our negative or what we would think of as negative. It's fine.
I think there's really interesting idea about, you know, I guess because we sit to meditate, we walk slowly also.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about we think that slow always equals mindful, or mindful has to be slow.
Right.
And I'm most mindful in life when things are happening real fast.
Real quickly.
Yeah, uh-huh. And I don't have time to, analyze.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of thinking about that peeling the orange, because when I do go to slow down and I do try to concentrate, like I write a fair bit of poetry, and it comes fast.
Mm-hmm.
And I hardly ever edit it. I mean, a little bit, but it comes, and I like what comes, you know, what it is.
Right.
And I express myself best when things are
right.
fast, and especially if things are a little bit dangerous, then it's like, and that's when I feel the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I slow down, that's when all the...
The editor
all the chatter
part
comes in.
Yeah.
And I know I was thinking about that while I was peeling the orange, and I kind of intentionally ate it. Not super fast, but I didn't want to slow it down that much because,
yeah.
I don't know, because whenever I eat an orange, it's usually at lunch at work and I have a half hour and I feel
exactly.
But I enjoy
exactly.
it very, very much. Like,
uh-huh.
it's
yeah.
not, I don't, you know, I don't feel like I forget to enjoy it. I'm sure I do sometimes, but I always enjoy having an orange.
Yeah.
Well, see, it is like when we were hiking and kids would be hot and we would be hot and oranges never tasted as good as they did at that time.
Yeah.
They just, and it wasn't a matter of how quickly you got into it. It was how quick you could get it into you and really experience the impression of it.
It's more about the direct experience aspect. So, like sometimes it's first thought, best thought. And then, sometimes when we do slow down, we're more self-conscious. But either way, there's some training of our meditative state or some recognition.
Moving slowly or quickly.
But here we're just exploring, well, what is that contemplative state of mind? I don't know if people have done things like Ikebana, because this exercise is more just about perception. Mm-hmm. So other exercises we do would be about expression. So, writing poetry or whatever, knitting. it's about expression. And this one's more about just perceiving how we take it in.
The first time I ever meditated was with the Friends of the Western Buddhist Order, and they introduced it by giving everyone a raisin.
Right,
and it was a raisin and you fell in your mouth and stuff. But I had come from the climbing gym where I had
we had a whole thing of raisins.
No, I have really stinky climbing shoes. And so my hands just smelled like feet because I was taking them off. Eat the raisins, and then they all went around, and got to me, and I was like, well, all I could think about was gross feet.
Well, that's part of our sensory field.
It is.
I mean, that's just part of it, of how we put together our world. So
that's such a haiku in the making, Sticky, delicious, orange. Feet,
yeah. So I think, the main thing about all of this is that there is tremendous basic goodness in how we can work with our world, even the stinky feet and all, And Rinpoche talked about that as. Because, when we do start criticizing ourselves, that is a form of aggression, either self-aggression or sometimes we, direct it to other people. So part of our practice is working with that. What he called aggression, it has different connotations in a way, but it's that judgmental quality.
Would that also include being judgmental for the good and saying, look at how I experienced this orange so awesomely? Would that be included?
Well, it could be if you fixate on it. The thing about meditation is it shows us where we get fixate. So we could fixate at any point, actually.
So it's not necessarily just the negative thoughts that you're having. No. If you're fixated on, my orange in all the room.
Or the best way to feel.
Exactly.
And I was looking at Eric's orange and I thought, his orange looks bigger than mine. I got the last orange,
Oh, right, yeah.
I remember hiking one time in the desert. I was going up, and I was just hiking. Well, this was a trip that I took by myself, but and I looked down and I saw an orange peel. This is in the Sonoran Desert. And the fixation, I don't know if that was a fixation or just something that was an awareness, I thought, Jesus, this thing's never
going to compost or anything.
It's going to be like sitting here for a long time.
But
so I don't know what that is, but it just made me aware of everything about my environment and was it going to rain and would that make that thing disappear eventually? And it just seeing the peel on the trail.
That sounds like it opened up a whole awareness of
That's what it felt like. It just made me sort of wake up and go, oh.
Right.
I didn't really have much judgment about it, but just awareness of how dry it is here. And,
right. Right.
And I thought, who's the jerk who left it? I might have. I don't remember that part. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Isn't part of it, I mean, the direct experience, the direct expression, if it happens for us in the moment, aren't necessarily watching it happen.
Right. It has that spontaneous quality.
And so we don't necessarily, we can't really say anything afterwards except maybe, oh, that was good.
Right. Yeah.
Is it also the direct experience is always happening?
Mm-hmm.
It's all, yeah.
Right. It's
yeah.
Full it's right there.
Is
yeah.
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 It's just.
But it's when you have that moment of
dropping it.
Aggression or the
chatter.
Or the filter. Like I can't take any more action. Mm-hmm. You know. I gotta filter some of this out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where, you know, people that have chosen, like meditators, that's how we work with that. I mean, that we practice, the byproduct is the ability to have, you know, be more in touch with that world that's just always there. We're just like,
we're just away.
Just yeah, right.
But what's funny is that thing that keeps us unaware of it is so, it's nothing. You know, like the experience is so real, that orange is so real, and it's so tangible, and that the habit, the official tendency to be somewhere else, that's it's nothing. It's just thoughts, you know.
Yeah.
There's nothing tangible about it, you know.
Yeah.
Like the solidity of reality is so huge, and our minds are just. It seems like it's something we should be able to overcome more easily. You know, because it is nothing.
Seems like it, but
Yeah.
So I wonder what we do with this, though, because I'm thinking about Carol. You know, do we stick it in the compost thing? Yeah. I guess we do.
Oh, what, you mean the fumes?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, and I'm taking compost home for
Oh, great.
So
she's
are you
here.
Good? Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. So we're kind of at the end of the...
Yes,
this was kind of fun.
It was really
nice.
Yeah,
it was very nice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. I teach it in Naropa. We bow all the time.
Yeah. We should bow in it.
I see. Okay.
It's all good.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a 15-year-old cat.
Yeah.
So you're taking the orange peels?
Well, yeah, they're in their compost. Yeah, love.